Like,
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. We are back. It's been a minute. And how have you been?
Good, and yourself?
Been good, actually.
You have a bit of news for us.
Yeah, I wasn't actually.
Engagged again?
Engagged again, yes. I'm engaged. And,
congrats.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful. Good step moving forward and looking forward to it. Well, I mean, I'm doing it, so I guess.
That's, I should hope so.
Yeah, so that's a... But yes, I am.
This is so, when Sarah hears this recording, she knows that he's so dreamy still.
That we at least addressed it on the podcast for the podcast listeners. But yeah, we're over the moon. That's the truth. So anyway, well, without further ado, I'll forego the pleasantries because I believe everyone knows that if you want more of this, you should just go to modstate.com. And if you are listening to this, you're listening to it somewhere. So if anything,
you don't want more of this, then what the hell are you doing?
Exactly. So we're doing a follow-up. I think the last podcast episode I did was on a couple questions from one of our listeners from New Zealand. So we figured we would continue in that...
Wanderers from down under.
Yeah, the thunder from down under. Figured we keep in the spirit of finishing these. Well, we haven't finished them all. However, we wanted to tackle some themes in some of these questions tonight, and I will do my best to get through these questions. So the first question, and I think we may not focus so much on the example that she provides. However, I think I'll go ahead and read it here. So she says, another thing that puzzles other countries, and I think what she means by other countries are westernized countries and the Commonwealth countries specifically, as they look at the U.S., is why has the narrative been framed such that is if people know what political party you support, then you can pretty much determine what position you will take regarding, and then you just insert the variable. In this case, she uses climate change. She goes... for example, climate change or the cause of climate change, or even if you think that climate change is a thing. She goes, this is not the case in other countries. She says, political parties have not generally taken a position one way or another. How did this happen in the U.S.? Should we just go ahead and start with that one? I think that's probably the...
Perhaps she's not including the U.K., I suppose. I mean, people generally knew where Tony Blair stood on price controls as a member of the Labour Party. But I see what she's getting at in the overall grand scheme of polarization, because I think it's safe to say, unless it's election time in France, and France election time is like less than a year. Here it spans multiple years.
Too long.
Way too long, regardless of the length. So unless it's election time in France, you know, it gets pretty polarized there. But she's talking about, I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, the perennial, it seems, polarization. Yes.
Yeah, and to add to that as well, I think it's almost as if you give me a topic, or if we're going to discuss a topic, that typically with a 95 to 98% surety, I can guess or have a good idea of what political party you are. You lean towards, or we're not even political party, but let's just say ideology. So, and
if you're Republican, you're going to be for lower taxes.
Yeah.
If you're going to be for further expansion of the state, yeah, specifically the federal state.
Or if you don't believe that climate change is man-made, then you're going to be conservative, or vice versa. If you're conservative, you have doubts about the 97% of evidence and consensus that's out there. So,
I don't give a damn whether you think it's man-made or not. Just come and see the football field worth of land disappearing from the Louisiana coast.
Yeah, I think so. to start with that,
yeah. It's happening.
So I think the broader, like you said, the broader concern or question here is the polarization, or why there isn't more cross-aisle support of certain, not so much policy, but just topics that we have to some, and we've talked about this before. It's like the barricade that goes up, and you're going to be hell-bent on supporting all these topics. It's like a list that's in front of you and says, if you are this, you have to support all of these specific initiatives and topics. And this is something
that's... You think we're not running for office. Yeah, I get to be next Republican and you get to be an RFK Democrat.
I think when you look at the independent in the United States, I think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's a fair assumption to believe, because, you know, I guess if you were to ask me a political affiliation or where, how are you registered, I would say, well, it's independent. And it's not because I don't fully agree with the Democratic platform, or I don't fully disagree with the Republican platform. It's that I believe that the smarter choice or the more responsible choice is to take each topic on and weigh its merits as it should have, or have the pros and cons lists per each issue.
That's too much effort, Nate, in an information society where, I mean, everything is instant, okay? You got Amazon drones, for God's sake, dropping off clothes at your house, okay? You take Pink Floyd song, Us Versus Them, it really settles it, and then you add in the decision of Citizens United. That's it.
Yeah,
that's changed everything.
And that is an unfortunate fact of this, and I think we'll have to do a podcast on Citizens United.
It's true, though. The money has made it so severe it's not possible, unfortunately, in the current dynamic. That's why you've got men like Trey Gowdy walking away, calling themselves failures.
Well,
okay, because they don't feel like they can thrive in this current climate.
So that's something that's very interesting that you just brought that up about money. So she mentioned something here. She said, I think that 24-hour cable info news is a big divisive force. She says, no one needs that much cable.
Welcome to the land of the living in America.
Exactly. No one needs that much cable, and I think the net effect on everyone is negative. So when you take, for example, the money that's pumped into these political, so we just say think tanks, into marketing, into ad campaigns.
What you and I are doing.
Yeah. If you're not careful, and I think Americans get wrapped up into this quite a bit, we pick our...
No, the frogs in the boiling pot of water, okay? The fact is, they're not even aware that it's gotten this bad, but the fact is, I was a junior in high school, so you were in middle school when 9/11 happened. Look at how much this country has changed since the inaction of the Patriot Act. I mean, the very idea before 9/11 that you could hold people without habeas corpus would have been absurd. It would have been a non-starter.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not in favor of extending the Patriot Act as a representative or a senator, you may as well pack your office up.
Yeah. It's I guess getting back to the the idea of money here, that when you do, and Americans tend to find the niche that they, it's like confirmation bias. And I don't mean that negatively, because I think that if you agree...
Please explain that as a positive.
As a positive? Well,
yes.
Let's just say that you are principled, right? So, I don't mean principled. I, that's relative. But let's say your principles are of such that you align as a Democrat, as a progressive, as...
I was going to say, because my relatives are not principled. Not all of them.
Well, your relatives aren't principled. That... You will get your news or your articles, let's just say, from a Huffington Post, which isn't its standalone. I mean, that's a conglomerate. They essentially pull articles.
Love the HuffPo. I know.
You know, I love it for many reasons, but we'll talk about that later.
I feel like playing Barry White every time you bring him up. Like, yeah, I know, but I love you, girl.
Yeah. So, but the same thing happens at like Fox News. If that's where you get most of your, and she's talking about 24-hour cable info news. I mean, that's where the money is pumping in these ad campaigns, and you just continually get primed with this ideology, and you will find yourself aligning with those things and what you like to hear. Now, I'm not advocating for just the dissolving cable network or talk shows. That's a egregious offense of the First Amendment. But I do. So, for example, let's.
There's no unringing this bell, okay?
There is not.
Fact, even if you get rid of super PACs, even if you get rid of Citizens United, you still can't prevent people like Koch Industries, or however you say it, Koch. I've heard it said a couple ways.
Koch.
Well, regardless, George Soros, you still, even if you take away the super PACs, you can't keep him and Rupert Murdoch from spending all they want to spend. You can't tell people they can't spend their own money, last I checked, in a free society. The other thing is, I would like to thank this writer, this lady who wrote him, because normally I don't get so sucked into this and discouraged about it until it's midway through the campaign season. But now, lately, all I can think about is they're doing it again. They're starting it early. Yeah.
Well, you know, again, I think it's really hard to boil down or nail down what creates this, that if you're conservative, you are going to agree with these list of things. Because I do believe that if you believe in a small federal limited government, you believe in states' rights, and you believe in the free market economy or capitalism, that there are going to be a number of topics that you will just agree with, whether that's tax reform or tax breaks, tax cuts, decreasing the corporate tax rate. There will just inherently be things that you agree with. But then there's something like climate change where you say, well, what benefit do you have as an average American to go against the evidence that says that there is climate change? And I think that's what bothers, for example, her or people in the Commonwealth that say, listen, what is it about the average American that's conservative that is just poo-pooing the climate change science?
And now, they see things, people they admire, like Ben Shapiro or Laura Ingraham or even Milo, who they not necessarily admire, but who they somewhat, invariably, on a large grand sum of the issues, agree with. Okay, they see them getting run out on a rail by the little commie brats at Berkeley. Okay, that's exactly what they act like. Okay,
yeah,
communists believe in violence as a means of social overhaul or overthrow, and they're being spoiled brats. So you don't agree with it, so you're not going to let them talk. That's the way they look at that. So automatically, anything that comes out of your mouth, if you're aligned with those commie kids, is I don't want to hear it,
yeah,
even if it's true.
So there's another variable to this too, and I'll find a link and put it in the show notes. But there's a very interesting it's a book, but there's a podcast done by an individual who has researched the emergence and the merging of free market capitalism and Christianity, it was preached from the pulpit, essentially. And that was...
Is this a segue?
In a bit. In a way, it could be.
Yes.
In a way, it could be. So, but just I think the point here is that... you'd have to listen to the podcast to get the full effect. But the idea was that there was a drive back in... So it was in the 30s, 40s, to preach from the pulpit that it was... You know, take control of your life, be all you can be, which is not inherently bad. I think that's a positive message. The problem was it was backed by business money to push this out. It was money that went to the church that was then pushed out in the form of
that changes the validity of the message. How?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, I see what you're getting at. And in my opinions, we'll get to once you
Okay.
Sag into our play here.
Well,
I
mean, this
personal opinion that's righteous, correct, whatever label you want to use, whether big business is back here or not. If our views happen to coalesce, great. But as you know, knowing me, there's a lot of things where J.P. Morgan Company would be backing slowly off and scowling at me on.
Sure. So, and I have to be careful about lumping in all. God-fearing Christians, like that's not my intent here. However, it's hard to part the waters, if you will, or separate Christianity and conservatism, or separating Republicans and Christianity, because they go far closer together and are far more paralleled than, let's say, the left and progressives and Democrats and Christianity. So. So let's get to sort of this next question, talking about
parting the waters.
Yeah, you saw, man. Yeah, I'm here. I'm being biblical.
Yeah,
so this is where the next question really is about collective responsibility versus individuality or individual rights. And where in the United States has this sort of, especially in the Christian community, and bear in mind, let me just preface, the individual that has written this letter is a practicing Christian. So it isn't as if she's atheist agnostic and calling out American Christians. She is of Christian faith and practice in New Zealand. So I, for whatever reason, I feel like her question has a little bit more validity or is coming from a place of question as a practicing Christian. So
I propose, so you know, if it was coming from Buddhist extremist camps,
You know, it may not be as
many of those.
No, it may not be as it may not come across the same way if she was atheist calling out Christians. But she says, so let's just the example that she gives here is that she talked with an elderly couple in a airport in Utah. And they were talking, she'd asked some questions about, I mean, she's a very gregarious individual, and they began to lament about having to pay pregnancy benefits as part of their company insurance program. And they're older individuals, but they were not worried about Alzheimer's benefits being part of the same insurance policy. So it seems that collective responsibility for the community is not as high as a value as personal responsibility. It is interesting when I try to understand the Christian churches who apparently seem to be generally conservative, which I think that's a good generalization. They do generally are more conservative leaning. I don't want to say just Republican because there's plenty of conservative parties. Christianity would be more aligned with collective responsibility, right? I don't know. Most of the major churches here in New Zealand would tend to be more aligned with political parties that have some sort of socialistic leaning. Just a difference that I note. So there's a few things to unpack here. The first
one being that pregnancy is, I believe, doctors have discovered what causes that. Alzheimer's, while we know that there are some of the things that cause it, not quite as easily preventable as pregnancy now, is it?
No, but there's
maybe that's what the individuals are getting at.
Maybe, except
the boy can choose when she and her husband make a baby. You can't necessarily choose if you get Alzheimer's.
But I mean, I'll make a leap here that,
I mean, that's a leap in and of itself. I'm not saying I hear that, but I could hear that around the dinner table.
Sure. But that's assuming that this elderly couple maybe never had kids and they say, I don't understand why I have to pay for paternal leave or pregnancy. But you know what? I can't. I've got Alzheimer's in my family, so I feel like it's essentially prioritizing the community, and it's putting their issues first. And I mean, that's self-preservation, and I'm not necessarily upset about it. However, I think what her point is that within the conservative party, who generally are more religious, they're Christian leaning, she's wondering, where does that sense of collective community that is the church, where has that gone? Where is the spirit of Christianity there, or the spirit of community? Where has that been lost? And I think obviously she's examining this from across the globe and saying, this is the sense that we get from the United States, from just having conversation.
But I'm not saying she's wrong.
I'm not. I'm certainly not at all. So
no, you're not.
So I think the one thing we also need to break down is this idea of socialistic leanings. So I don't think she's advocating for socialism. That's not the point. I think what she's looking at is more of universal programs. That might be just sugarcoating what socialism is, but as you know, in New Zealand and Australia, in New Zealand and Australia, they have a form of universal healthcare, but they also have a private healthcare system as well. So you can opt in to the private. It's basically what we have now, only on a broader scale of Medicaid, Medicare for all.
Sometimes I'm not opposed to a public option.
No, and I don't think we've ever advocated, or I've never heard you advocate for no public option. I'm not putting you on blast here. But I think so her message here is not that she's advocating for
social, what's up with the Christians.
That's pretty much it. What's up? How is it that it is this, not even individual to the point of just you, the individual, but the collective community that is maybe your Christian church or your Christian domination or your Christian sect.
I'll point out, discussed to varying lengths in the podcast before. One is, it's like the old Village People song, YMCA. Gone are the days when you can go into YMCA and get clean, have a good meal, and get back on your way. But as my chaplain in the Navy once said, yeah, but they'll take $100 from you for a gym membership. That's one. Mm-hmm. The other is this, every sperm is precious mentality, and every child must be born. But once you're here, best of luck to you, kiddo.
Yeah, there's
and the child of the Rockefellers is on equal footing with the kid born in the hood. It's like, get out of town. Yeah. I know those things.
And I think that's, honestly, and this is just a side note from this, but I think, and I may be speaking for some people here, and this may be inappropriate. However, I think what maybe Christians or pro-life individuals need to understand is that pro-choice individuals or people that align pro-choice aren't looking to kill and abort fetuses. That's not the point. It's an option. So what they see with the Christian community or the which is generally the pro-life community is that, listen, I'm on board. I don't want to abort this fetus. There's
You're saying that people that are pro-choice are not pro-abortion.
They're not pro-abortion. No one's pro-aborting a fetus. However,
this isn't a Roe versus Wade podcast. It's another time.
I hope to not turn it into that. But
no, let's not.
Yeah, I think what they see is that, look, we'd be on board. Like, just as just for an example, we would be on board with you. However, what we're seeing is that you care so much about this conception, this fetus, but then when it is now a human, there's not an equal amount of worry and concern for that life as it was when it was in utero. And I think this is another thing that people will look at from abroad and say, I just don't understand how you can be so against social programs and helping people, yet you're so concerned about the welfare and collective community of unborn children. So where does this get lost? Where is this collective response?
Here.
Oh yeah, please go ahead.
First of all, this is a little caveat. I have to tell you thank you to all of our very, very much neocon listeners for saying before it is a person. That was beautiful. You just pigeonholed yourself for them perfectly. I don't see it that way, but wonderful phrase, choice of words. But I would like to point out, again, something I put before in the podcast, the point of Bonaparte, that a man will fight much harder for his interests than for his rights, because there was a question kind of in there in a letter somewhere about, what is this big deal about rights? Well, that feeds into one of the points of, when he came to America, when it was still the colonial, there were Spanish colonies, there were English colonies, there were French colonies, they came to the quote-unquote New World to escape what they perceived as religious persecution, much of which they felt was being administrated by those states. Mm-hmm. Now, I know this is not, what the hell, this is not about separation of church and state. You'd be hard-pressed to convince some of them of that, okay, yeah. This idea of government programs. And I'm not trying to strengthen their hand, but I will point out, since we're on the topic of Christianity, you opened the door here.
Yeah, I did.
When Christ was asked about his flock feeding people, he said, if you love me, basically, people don't tell me you love me with your mouth. Feed my flock. Take care of, feed my sheep. What he did not say, however, and I would say this with all due respect to the Holy See, okay? I believe that Pope Francis is sincere, but at this point, he was sincerely mistaken about expansive government. And here's the real point here. I know you're going to disagree as far as where I'm going with it, but the fact is, in the text, Christ did not say, disciples, we need to gather up. We need to meet with the Sanhedrin. We need to get together with the Senate in Rome. And we need to create some programs to take care of these poor people throughout the Roman Empire. That's not what he said. He said, if you have extra, you need to give. If you have an extra tunic, you need to give. Okay, I'm paraphrasing here. But never did he call on any semblance of central intervention on behalf of the less fortunate. What he made clear, however, to his people was, don't say you love me. If you love me, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but why are my people starving on the street? And so that's a point for not Christians to jump up and go, yeah, you filthy hippies. No, that's a time for you to go look in the mirror and say, why is the government having to get involved in the first place?
Yeah, I think that would be my follow-up question is, well, then why does the government have to get involved? Now, I think that was very articulate. I'm not sitting here and disagreeing with you. I believe that there was nowhere in the Bible, especially when I was a practicing Christian, that I read that anywhere.
The church has dropped the ball.
So
it's a double-edged sword.
And listen, okay? there are progressive, or I don't want to say progressive, rather conservative.
There are Christian socialists.
There are. And there are conservative talk shows. There's conservative podcasts out there that do advocate for a sense of community surrounded by the church. And they look at that for universal health care benefits within the church, meaning that the church then provides for those who are sick, for those who need help. And I think that's very noble. However, where I run into issues with that is, what about the church?
Jewish idea.
What's that?
That's a very Catholic and Jewish idea.
Sure, but I don't know why.
As far as community involvement,
and it is, and some of these podcasts are they're Hebrew or Jewish individuals. The issue that I run into with that is, though I think it's noble and it's a great idea, I think there should be a sense of collective responsibility with every community. I mean, not just religious. I think every community. However, there are less fortunate and more fortunate communities, and unless that is sort of.
The lack of a guarantee troubles you.
Yes. And again, I'm not saying that that you're guaranteed.
Federal government has a pretty big guarantee with DHS.
Well,
they can do what they want to do.
I mean,
and so saying, yes, you will take this out of your pay and give to the poor. That's a virtual guarantee.
It is. I'm not saying that
you don't like the idea of the less fortunate being at the mercy of strangers.
But at the end of the day, the less fortunate will still be on the losing end of the stick.
We're still going to be relying on strangers, just bureaucrats in D.C.
I mean, it's sort of like a lose-lose here. I mean, what are the chances of a virtually white suburban megachurch versus even when it comes to the sense of community of some.
I'm gonna leave that one alone.
I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. I mean, there is a way that there to me, in that idea of the collective responsibility of the church or the community, still leaves people disenfranchised and probably will be those who are already disenfranchised, because the Hispanic church on the corner here in Aurora doesn't have the same means through its collective group as the we'll just pick a non-denominational church over in Stapleton that, you know, the average salary of the individual over there is, let's just say, $250,000 a year. So and that's true. I mean, this is I'm not making up demographics.
Hey, I'll tell you, you make more money, but you also don't forget, Christ didn't say, you know, the scripture doesn't say, it's Old and New Testament actually, that says that you should give 10% of the church, and that's in addition to taxes. And this big thing of me personally, I'm sorry, charitable contributions should be, you know, it shouldn't be tax exempt. I'm sorry. Christ said that your charitable donations, he didn't say, oh, and by the way, you can take that out of your taxes. Never said it.
I mean, and some people have advocated for, and I'm just saying some people, but people that I have listened to on the right or conservatives have said that I believe that by reducing taxes, then that should be augmented to these social programs with charitable contributions.
It should be.
But here's the problem. It's just like, it's no different from the corporate tax cut, that it's on good faith that these corporations are going to give back to their workers, that they're going to.
All right, Senator. Yeah.
Hey, look. Yeah, right.
Look, he's my guy. I get it. Okay. Well, he was my guy. He was my dog in the 2016 fight. What I would say to him is what I said to you on Facebook earlier. we're not really going to know what's happened with this law until the full tax season under it has transpired.
Well,
but I agree with the overall spirit of what you're saying, and you haven't heard me tonight defend. I'm in favor of capitalism, okay? The problem is for these kids that crap on capitalism, they've never known it. They've known crony capitalism, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm not at all here defending the status quo in as far as greed goes, okay? Pink Floyd misquoted the scripture of the song Money, okay? The scripture does not say money is the root of all evil. Let's get that straight. It says the love of money is the root of all evil. And there's a big difference. Money is a tool. It's like a shovel. You can build a garden with it, or you can kill somebody with it. Okay, money, you can hoard and hoard and hoard, and guess what? You take none of it with you. Or, yeah, you can take care of your own, but you can also do a little looking out for the other guys as well.
Yeah. So it's I think it was a fairly fascinating – I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit over the last 100
months. London was awesome. We talked about this letter for a month now.
Yeah, we have, and I really think – it's interesting to get a perspective from.
I'm really grateful to her for writing.
Yes,
and I know I've made kind of some sport with it, but I hope, I don't know if she listens to this or not.
Well, she's a good sport, so anything we
with
say.
With all due respect, I make sport with it. If you need to know how seriously I take myself, look up Gabe Coker's article on our 2-year anniversary. I mean, we got the help troll out of us.
Yeah, indeed. So, well, we're going to leave it there. Yeah, we're going to leave it there. This is, we just wanted to touch on these, and we will be back this week for some more episodes, and I'm looking forward to that. I think, I think the next podcast episode we do will be YouTube. So this one we forewent to YouTube, but you'll be able to find
it. We just need to get our saccharine voices back in.
We need to brush off the cobwebs of talking together, but we'll be back on.
I miss you, man.
Yeah, I have too, man. It's been good to get back.
Like the new artwork, finally seeing us with our nom de plumes together.
Yeah, a little suit action. So we'll have that some artwork up, and it'll be good.
Hey, did you notice the picture? My dad was cracking up because the poor the Secret Service guy trying to hold him on the bus, the back truck.
I realize that a lot of listeners are like, "What in the hell are they talking about?"
Look at that. Go to mindstate.com or Facebook. Our Mod State page on Facebook. I'll put it up on the regular site as well. But
cool.
No, there's RFK campaigning. There's Nixon campaigning. But in the RFK, Bobby Kennedy's picture, he's leaning off a truck to shake hands with somebody. And there's this guy, he might not have been Secret Service, but he was a bodyguard whose arms wrapped around his waist like Bobby.
Gotta get back in here. I'm going to go look at that. I didn't look that close.
It's funny. It's the top image of it's our banner on Facebook right now. It's, awesome. It's a cool image.
You did a good job with it.
I know you're a fan of it, but it definitely makes me kind of whimsical going, man, what if? But anyway,
what if?
We're over time. Love you, brother.
All right, man. Until next time.
Oh, wow.
We'll see you.